Focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Yeah, welcome back to the program. Here we go again. It is time for another hour of Bucket Strategy Investing, my favorite show. Brain Trust here as always. We are standing by to help you out with whatever money issues that you might have. And of course, I would suggest that everybody has money issues one way or another. Professor Rick Plum joins me. I'm Johnny Dean. We're here in studio. Plum is our main Brain Trust advisor once again. We got more money strategies headed your way. And of course, you can take part in all of this. Just get your question into us right now. Here's our phone number, 877-PLANNER, 877-752-6637. We had a couple of folks on. I think they dropped off, so we do have still a couple of lines open for you. Again, 877-752-6637. You can find us online, wealtheded.com, W-E-A-L-T-H, wealtheded.com. If you have any questions or comments you'd like to get to us via email, that's where you go. There's a link there that says find your answer, and you can easily take it from there. We make it very simple for you. Wealtheded.com, that's your resource for many of the topics that we discuss on this program. You can see the blog posts, audio, video, all there at wealtheded.com. Our number again in studio, 877-PLANNER. I told you that. We do talk strategy on this program. We talk bucket strategy investing. We'll be talking a little bit more about that in a second or two, but I'd suggest that if you don't have a strategy, I urge you to get one. Do not put your retirement funds at risk, all right? You call Professor Plum or anyone at Lucia Capital Group at their off-air number, 800-644-1150, and have them look at what you have. They can help design a bucket strategy that we hope that we will do our best to tailor and meet your needs and get you where you want to go. Are your retirement goals being met? If not, or if you're unsure about anything that's in your plan, in your portfolio, you can give us a call right here. Again, off the air, 800-644-1150. Brain Trust will tell you if you're on the right track. In fact, we'll do that on the air as well. 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. Okay, so I wanted to address a couple of emails that we got on our discussion in a previous hour, Professor Plum, regarding value averaging. Now, we were talking about it, if you missed out on it, Give us the, you had a nice like 30 second version or so of what value averaging is. How would you describe it?
Well, value averaging is the idea that you can identify when you're ahead of where you expected to be and then take some of those profits, and also identify when you're a lot lower than you expected to be and maybe identify a buying opportunity. It is not market timing. It is not saying this is the high point, so sell, this is the low point, so buy. We're just trying to identify opportunity. When we are ahead of the game, we want to maybe take some of our profits off the table. Of course, that means that you need to know where you are in the game. You need to know that you need to know where you expect to be at any given point.
Yep.
Unfortunately, most people, that takes strategy. You have to understand what you're trying to accomplish, have realistic expectations, and then monitor and manage those returns and expectations.
Exactly. So somebody might look at the face of that and say, well, okay, so you're talking about selling high and buying low, buy low, sell high, which is the mantra of just about every investor out there, the core of their investment, at least the idea, not that they do it. And somebody could say, well, you know, that sounds suspiciously like I'm trying to time the market. But
well,
it's not.
You're timing the market, it depends on what you determine timing the market. Most people, when they talk about timing the market, are trying to find the high point to sell and the low point to buy. With value averaging, sure, it's a little bit of timing. It's you're identifying when you're in a good position to potentially sell. You go into the stock market, you go into a growth investment, you go into an investment with an idea of an expected return. But the one thing we can count on is that the expected return is probably not going to be the exact return we get. It's going to be higher or lower than what we expected. And when you're talking about growth investments, it could be significantly higher or significantly lower than you expected at any given moment, any given year, any given time period. By identifying where you expect to be and then looking at it and saying, I'm way ahead or I am way behind where I expected to be, it gives you the opportunity to make an adjustment. Now, one of the adjustments, especially if you're way below where you expect to be, was this the right investment I should have been in the first place? That's a different question.
Right.
But if it is the appropriate investment for what you're trying to achieve over a long period of time, then it may be identifying a time to buy more of it. On the other side, when it's way up on the high side, maybe that's identifying a time to take some profit off the table. It doesn't mean that it's not going to keep going up. It doesn't mean that you're picking the best time to sell. There rarely is a time where anybody can identify that was the best time to sell, other than luck. This is trying to identify an appropriate time to sell. Maybe not the best, because it may go up again. The idea is to identify when you're way ahead of where you expected to be.
Right. Now, market timing tends to say this is the top point, this is the bottom point, this is where you need to jump in. Now, I want to just very quickly before we get to the calls, Bill had sent an email. Good to hear from you, Bill. And I just want you to address this very quickly. He says, all market strategies are market timing. The assumption is that over time, the investment will increase in value over time. Dollar cost averaging works for people without a lump sum, but does not guarantee a profit over any period of time.
No, it doesn't, especially short periods of time. Longer periods of time, it tends to add to your overall return. So we're talking about dollar cost averaging, putting in a systematic amount each period, monthly, quarterly, semi-annual, whatever the case may be, and not actually, you know, worrying about what the market's doing. So when the market is low, you buy a lot of shares. When the market is high, you don't buy very many shares. It's the same dollar amount going in each time. And that does not guarantee a return, but over longer periods of time. Now, we have never had a 15-year period of time where the market has not created a positive result. Does that mean that we will never have one in the future? I have no idea what the future holds. But so far, we've always been able to recover. Now, if we go through a period of time where we don't recover, that long-term investment is the least of our worries at the moment. At that time, if we keep going down and down and down and down and we never recover, then the reality is we don't recover. There's nothing you can do. And there's nothing that would have worked. And so dollar cost averaging gives us an advantage. For one thing, the one thing that we know is going to happen in the stock market, and that one thing is volatility. And the only way to take advantage of that volatility that I have been able to find is to have a long-term time horizon and buy in when it's low, buy in when it's high, dollar cost average in over long periods of time. And sometimes it's longer than we want it to be. But we talk about the lost decade, where the market went basically nowhere. If you've been dollar cost averaging in over that decade, you would have made money.
You're talking about 2000 to 2009. Through 2009.
Yeah. Right. Pick any period of time where the market was flat. When we say the market was flat, it doesn't mean it started here and flatlined all the way across to here. It means it started here, it ended here. But in the middle, it may have gone way up, way down, way up, way down, way up, way down. If you're buying a little here and a lot here, little on the top, lot on the bottom, little on the top, lot on the bottom, by the time it gets back to the starting point, you've actually made money. It does require time. And so while it doesn't guarantee a return over a short period of time, over longer periods of time, at least historically speaking, it has guaranteed a return. We can't guarantee what the future will hold. We don't know. But this value averaging is different than dollar cost averaging. But both of them are trying to take something that the market gives us, volatility, more volatility, more upside or downside potential than we had expected or than we counted for, and try to use it to our advantage.
All right, 877-PLANNER, I got just a couple minutes before the break, but we may have to continue the call. But let's get to a couple of calls here, one or two, before we have to take a break. Dan in Olympia, Washington. Hi, Dan. How can we help you today?
Oh, I had a question about your program the other day about inflation. And when I was studying economics back in the 50s, whenever the government went into deficit spending and spent a lot of money, we always had inflation. And you said we're not having inflation now. And my question is, why aren't we having inflation with all this gigantic deficit?
Because the deficit is not big enough. That's the truth.
And the other side of it is because economics is not an exact science, unfortunately. The
problem is, and I can help you out, the problem here, Dan, is that based on the population that we have, the deficit is not big enough.
Back in the 50s,
we were on a gold standard, or we were on the Bretton Woods standard, which was similar to a gold standard. So that's probably a little bit different situation. But you cannot grow an economy without a growing supply of money, and with the supply of money just isn't there right now. In fact, they're talking about reducing the deficit, Dan.
Right. Early this morning, the market went up because the Fed said something about, we're going to be cautious in raising interest rates in the future. that's news? I mean, and the market reacted shortly because
But that's why you're not seeing inflation, Dan.
But this is also.
But what is the? Are we going to have a problem with the gigantic deficit eventually?
No. You can't. The deficit is simply the amount of money that the government issues into existence.
As long as
that's what that is. The government deficit is actually the private sector surplus.
As long as we believe a dollar is worth a dollar and we can turn that dollar over to somebody who will give us a good and service for that fair value, that's all that matters. If the deficit ever got so large in people's minds that we lost faith in the currency, that's the problem. Because as John said, we're no longer on a gold standard. There's nothing actually backing up the government backing up the gold other than our faith that the dollar is worth a dollar.
Yes, hyperinflation historically has never been caused by too much money. It's a loss of the full faith and credit. Dan, if you have other questions, hold on. I do have to take a break. It's an interesting topic to me, and I'm all over this, as you can tell. Yeah. But that's why. Dan, if you have some more questions, I said hold on, just got to take a break. 877-PLANNER. We're coming right back with more Bucket Strategy Investing. More Plum music. We've been rocking it the last couple of days here on this program.
This is one of my, it brings back great memories of growing up, and this album just means something to me.
What was this, high school? I can't even recall. This would have been about your high school. This is like, high school, early high school, junior high for me. This was a dance song for us, believe it or not, in junior high school.
It's a fun song.
It's a fun song. Okay, anyway. So speaking of fun, by the way, Professor Plum here. I'm Johnny Dean, Bucket Strategy Investing. If you want to meet this guy in person, who actually is, despite his wonkiness and nerdiness, is actually kind of a fun dude to hang out with. You can do so at... Gee,
thanks.
I hope I can live
up to that one.
Well, you know what? You can't disappoint anybody by lowering expectations, okay? He's actually kind of a fun guy to hang out with. Talking money with you and all that at the various workshops that are coming up. The next one is going to be on February 20th. That's in Las Vegas, Nevada. So it's just it's right around the corner, as a matter of fact. Las Vegas on February 20th. Join the Brain Trust. I think it's at the Renaissance Hotel.
It is, off Paradise.
Right. You go to wealthad.com to sign up. It's free. We just want to know how many chairs to put out and how many people are going to show up. And we would love to see you there. Get your money questions answered. It's all about retirement income strategies. It's the spring series from Lucia Capital Group. They'll be talking about challenges and strategies to make sure that you try to ensure that you don't run out of money before you run out of time. February 27th will be Seattle, and March 12th is Phoenix. So Las Vegas, Seattle, and Phoenix, the next three. I have sold you. There will be more after that. If you want to find out where, as we get closer, we'll tell you on the air, but you can go to wealthed.com. That's where you sign up, wealthed.com. Find out where and when the Brain Trust will be near you. I do think it'll be well worth your time on those Saturdays. Okay, 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. Now, you addressed the dollar cost averaging aspect, Professor Plum, of what we were talking about, value averaging. I also wanted to get to, I think it was Vincent.
Yes.
Who actually, you did talk about this, but I'll bring it up anyway. He says, Rick, in your discussions of value averaging or any strategy that involves taking profits and buying other stocks, I never or rarely hear a discussion about capital gains taxes. I rarely take profits and reinvest, not only because it involves trying to time the market, but because those capital gains taxes that you pay represent a drain on the capital that could otherwise be working for you. Not to mention those capital gains often put you in a higher tax bracket.
And sometimes they do.
Sure.
And capital gains, taxes are a consideration, but they shouldn't be the driving force. Now, you don't need to value average. Value averaging is a concept to help you stay in the game and feel better about what you're doing, but it's not necessary if you've got your strategy done right. If you've got an appropriate time horizon, don't need to touch the money, 15, 20 years, don't ever need to touch the money. In fact, if you never need to touch the money because you've got enough income from other sources and this money really isn't for you at any time during your lifetime, there's no reason to value average. Let it grow, let it go, don't worry about it. And then when you pass away, your heirs get a step up in basis. There's only two ways, as I mentioned in the first hour, only two ways to avoid taxes on that. One is to die. Now, that's fine for your heirs. It's not very good for you. And the other one is watch the market turn against you and lose the profit. So a lot of times paying some taxes on excess profits that we weren't expecting to have in the first place, having money left over in my pocket, even after selling off and paying some taxes, having the money I thought I would have in my growth account still, and then having some money on the side, even after paying taxes, is better than having an unrealized gain that could go away before I get a chance to sell it. And I mentioned before, I've seen it happen too many times where people want to eke out that last little bit of gain, a little bit more. It's still going up. It's still going up. And so by the time they do sell it, it's gone back down. And it doesn't always happen this way, but the downturns, just in my observation, tend to be a little more severe than the upside movements. And so they go down quicker than they go up. And unfortunately, we've seen it too many times where, sure, somebody doesn't want to pay the taxes, so they hold on longer, and now they don't have to pay the taxes because the market turned around and went away, and they don't have any gains to worry about paying taxes with. Anytime you're dealing with market investing, long-term investing, if you're ever thinking about you're going to need the money in your lifetime, you're going to be doing something to try. You're going to be tax harvesting and these things to minimize the taxes. But not selling when the market is higher than expected isn't always the best way to avoid paying taxes. Unfortunately, many times you lose money and then you don't have to pay the taxes.
Yeah, that's just kind of what we have seen over the years. Taxes are a consideration, but it shouldn't be the only consideration. I said there were people back in the that wouldn't pay the taxes back in the 90s. They didn't want to sell because they were afraid to pay the taxes, and they still haven't made it up 16, 17 years later. All right, 877-PLANNER, back to the phone lines. We still have two lines open. Let's go to Matt next in Portland, Oregon. Hello, Matt.
Hey, guys, can you hear me?
Can do, yeah. What's up?
Great. Hey, first question. Can I mention a company name online or on the air?
I mean, you can, but unless it really matters about the question, I'd rather you didn't. But...
Well, what do you
okay,
got?
Let's not. So I'm looking at a convertible opportunities bond fund.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing full well that it's susceptible to interest rates, but I'm curious what your opinion is of those. This particular fund is paying right now at about 13% return.
Well, one of the reasons it's paying 13%, it wasn't designed to pay 13%. Just the price, for whatever reason, of the underlying security is dropped tremendously. The income stayed the same, and the value, the asset value, dropped tremendously. So the question is, will the value come back? So with a convertible security, they're pricing it in some respects, not just on the income you're receiving, but the value of what the conversion would be. So that you can convert the bond to a stock, but if that stock is worth a whole lot less, the conversion means a whole lot less. And so you have to look at whether or not you think that the underlying asset value will come back. High yields, in many cases, just represent the fact that the net asset value has gone way down. If I've got a $100,000 investment that's paying me $5,000 a year, I'm getting a yield of 5%. If that same $100,000 drops to $50,000, but the asset is still paying the same dividend, the same interest, whatever it was, now I'm getting $5,000 of payments on $50,000 of value. I have a 10% yield. Is that
right
now? Is that a good time? In many, many cases, it signals a good time to get in, assuming the value comes back. But if it's a value that isn't going to come back, then, 10% yield's fine, but it may actually go, an increasing yield like that could be a scary idea, because that means that the net asset value is going down. And so it's one of those areas that I'm not going to evaluate the bond fund. In fact, I don't really go through that. I'm glad that I have somebody I trust to do that for me. And they look at it and how that interrelates with other bond funds, other short things, and put it together. But you have to understand what the potential for recovery is in that area.
I see. Yeah, and it has dropped significantly. Mm-hmm. It used to trade at about $14.50 a share, and now it's down around $9 a share.
That's why the yield is so high.
Got it. Yeah, because it's about 10-15% below I think it's called its NAV, NAV.
Yeah, net asset value. Yeah. So as long as it stays there or comes back, it's fine. If it keeps going down, you lose money.
Matt, I got to take a break, but if you have some more questions, please hang on. We'll bring you back on the other side. It'll just be a couple of moments here, a couple of minutes. So once again, great questions by everybody. We could explain the relationship, in fact, if you need to, between bonds and yield and all that and interest rates. So hang on for more. We do have a line open, too, now, 877-PLANNER, 877-752-6637. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group. We're coming right back right after this. PLANNER, 877-752-6637. Taking your calls right now. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, standing by. Emails, you go to wealthed.com, our website, wealthed.com. Send us an email. We'll answer it here on the show. Let's get to, let's see, a whole bunch of people here. Let's get to David in Ridgefield, Washington. I'm 62. I'm married. Is there a way in 2016 to lower my tax bill, my tax due? I work for the county in Washington State. I am currently covered by a state pension plan and also have already contributed $4,400 to a separate 457 deferred plan through my employer. Is it too late to contribute additional monies with the intent to lower my 2015 tax due? Our taxable income is $110,000.
Well, if your taxable income is $110,000, that means your gross income before deductions, taxable income is after deductions, your gross income is more than $110,000, more than $118,000, which means you cannot contribute to a deductible traditional IRA. You work for the state, you have a pension, you have a 457. Therefore, you're going to be subject to the phase-outs. Now, did he say he's married? Yeah, he's married.
Yeah.
Now, the question is your wife covered by a retirement plan at work? And if your wife is not covered by a retirement plan at work, and presumably if your taxable income is 110, you don't have $73,000 worth of deductions, so that means that your adjusted gross income before deductions is under $183,000 last year. And if she is not covered by a retirement plan at work, now she could be receiving a pension, but she's not an active participant where they're contributing to a plan. She doesn't have a 401k, 403b, 457. She doesn't work at a job where they have a SEP or a profit sharing plan or a defined benefit plan. If she's a stay at home or self-employed individual, she could do a deductible traditional IRA. So you could contribute up to $6,500 if she's at least 50 years of age or older into a traditional IRA, which would be deductible. You cannot. There's different limits for somebody who is in a plan and somebody who's not in a plan. And so depending upon, you know, whether she is or is not in a plan, at this point, your only ability to make a deduction for a contribution to a retirement plan is a spousal or her own deductible traditional IRA.
For 2015.
Now, for 2016, increase the contribution to your 457. You can do more there. $4,400 is not the maximum. $24,000 is the maximum. So you could add in almost another $20,000 of deductible contributions to a retirement plan. And that would save you, you know, probably pretty good money, 25% probably. So a reasonable, you know, $5,000 in taxes. What state?
Washington.
Don't have
no
to worry about state.
Tax.
Okay. That'd help you some federal taxes there.
Now, okay, so you mentioned, you said that of course they make too much money.
For him
to do a deductible traditional IRA, based on what he's told us, which means that his gross income is over the $118,000 limit.
Correct.
For this year. But if his wife is not in a plan, no 403B, no 401K, nothing at work.
No defined benefit.
She by herself can contribute to a deductible.
If she has earned income, she can contribute. Even if she doesn't have earned income, they can do a spousal IRA where she basically uses his income, assuming they're filing a joint return, she uses his income to support her contribution to an IRA. And because she's not in a plan and their total adjusted gross income is under $183,000, if she's not covered by a plan, she can do a deductible traditional IRA. So there's lots of different ways to do this. Now, if she's in a plan, you're in a plan, your income's over the 118 adjusted gross income side before deductions, then your only real option is a Roth IRA, which isn't a bad option.
No, but it doesn't help you.
But it doesn't help you with taxes today.
Yeah. Okay. There's your answer, David. Good question. I have to keep it. I got to keep that in mind about that. If the spouse does not have
the plan
at work, that's one that we don't talk about a whole lot. All right, let's take a couple of calls. We will get to some more emails. John and Richard and others, hang on for those emails. Valerie as well. Let's move down the list to Mark in Henderson, Nevada. Hello, Mark. Thanks for calling. How can we help you today?
Hello. I had some questions on widower's benefits.
Yes, sir.
And I went out on retirement, and I'm now receiving her benefits because they were a little higher than mine.
Okay.
And retired early at 52. And what I've run into is, you know, needing extra money. So I've taken part-time work for 1099 at the end of the year.
Right. And how old are you right now?
Just coming up 52.
Just coming up to 62.
51, actually. So my wife passed away.
Right. So you're
5 years ago.
You're well under 66.
Right.
Okay.
And what I've run into is you can make what, $15,000 a year?
A little more than that, but
Social Security.
Right. You can earn $15,000 if you're under full retirement age for every month of the year, which you will be. There is a retirement earnings test, meaning that if you want to get a retirement or a widower's any benefit from Social Security, then you have to be basically not working, or the equivalent of only working very part-time. If you make more than $15,720, you lose eligibility for some or all of your Social Security benefits. You lose $1 of eligibility for every $2 of earned income you have over and above the $15,720 for this year.
Okay, and that's what brings up the question of if you do go over, and apparently the new laws this year that went into effect, where would that money end up? Does it go back into your Social Security account?
No, it's just as if you didn't take it. So it's easier to understand. I went through this with somebody the other day. It's somewhat difficult to understand. If you make so much money that you lose all of your benefit and you pay it back, it's as if you didn't receive it. Remember, when you take it early, whether it's a widower's benefit or your own benefit, there is a reduction that happens. Instead of getting the full amount that you're entitled to, it's reduced. So what's going to happen is if you pay it all back, then when you ultimately become eligible for it because you quit work or you get to 66, then they're going to say, well, then you didn't take it early. We're going to give you the benefit without any reduction or without as much of a reduction. If they only take back portions of the benefit, because you know, you may be receiving $1,500 a month, but you're only $10,000 over the limit. So you make $25,720, so you lose $5,000 of your benefit. So instead of getting $15,000, you only got $10,000. The $10,000 will continue on with the full reduction, but the $5,000 that you paid back, that one-third of the benefit will actually be bigger when you become eligible for it again, when you're no longer working or at full retirement age. So they don't give it back to you in lump sum. They don't say, well, you paid us back $5,000, so we're going to give you that back later. They give it back to you in the essence that it wasn't reduced, and when you start your benefit later, it will not be reduced.
The checks will be higher.
You'll get a bigger benefit.
Yeah.
Okay. That brings up the next question. The fact that I went out on my wife's widower's benefits, I figured I'd go out on that now and then change back over to mine when I hit full retirement. But I'm not sure that I'm going to be higher than what hers was to begin with. So is that lost money in my Social Security?
Not necessarily. You probably, if your wife's, if the widower's benefit was larger than yours at 62, you can, let's ignore the working side of it. Let's just look at just the benefit side of it. When you get to 66, it's still going to be about the same. The advantage you have is your benefit doesn't stop growing by waiting until 66. You can wait until age 70 and then take your benefit. The widower's benefit is reduced if you take it earlier than your full retirement age, but it doesn't increase if you wait. Your benefit is reduced if you take it early, so that's where there's some parity between the two of them. But where one of them stops growing basically at 66, the other one grows all the way to age 70. So if they're similar at 62, your benefit will outpace hers by the time you get to 70, not necessarily 66. So in your case, I would wait till 70 to apply for your own benefit.
Okay, that makes sense. Because I figured she had paid in the maximum credit. Mm-hmm. And over a 40-year period anyway. but hers was much higher than mine to begin with. So
yes.
By $600 or $700.
Well, then yours
so
may or may not catch up. Yours may
right.
or may not catch up.
Right. Yeah, I think hers was $600-$700 more than mine was at the time I retired.
When
That's
did you
I went out on hers?
When did you start receiving these benefits? How many months or years ago did you start receiving benefits?
6 months.
You can undo it. The problem is you're going to go without some. You can undo it, and you could look at it and say, which one should I take? If you undo it, maybe you can flip over to your own benefit, which is smaller, but you also have to worry about giving it back for work. And so if you're going to lose it because of the work anyway, rescind your application, pay back what they've paid you, and then at 66, start the widow's benefit, and hopefully yours will grow larger, but that way you'll get a bigger benefit later on. But it's all about, can you afford to do that too?
Right.
Yeah.
So if you take $600 a month for the next 4 years, 5 years, does it outweigh going out on hers now? And it's about even.
Well, I'll tell you what, Mark, hang on a second. I have to take a break, so I apologize. But if you can hang on, maybe we can talk to you a little bit more on the other side. We can answer any other questions that you might have. I want to make sure that the strategy that you're doing is correct for you. So hold on if you need to. A couple of lines open still. More calls, trivia, etc. When we come back, Bucket Strategy Invest. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Club here for you, answering your money questions till the top of the hour. If you have any questions, get your calls in now because we're rapidly running out of time for the hour. 877-752-6637 spells out planner. We'll try to get to trivia in just a moment, but I want to finish up these calls. Now, Mark in Henderson, Nevada was asking some questions, and we asked Mark to hang on through the break. You still with us, Mark?
Yes, I am.
Okay, thanks for hanging on. Professor Plum needs a couple of numbers from you. Go ahead, Professor.
Mark, how much is your benefit at 62 or 66?
62, let's see, my 66, my wife's was 2,700, and I believe mine was like 1,800.
Okay, so 1,800.
She had more years in paying than I did.
Right.
Yeah. So even you're waiting until age 70 to take your benefit, it will never catch up to your wife's. So one of the things, if you want to have a better benefit later on and you think you're going to live into your late 70s, early 80s, late 70s, basically, you may want to reverse the order. Go back in and pay back what you've already received and apply for only your benefit, not her benefit. And then go in at 66 and apply for her $2,700 a month. And you'll get, and that will make sense. You'll get $1,200 a month now from your own benefit, instead of not even that. You'll get $1,300 or so. You'll take a reduction now, but you'll get a lot more later on from her benefit for the rest of your life. Now the question is, can you afford to do that?
Right. Where does that put us with this new law that went into effect on suspend and?
It doesn't have any effect on you. The new law has absolutely no issue with you. It didn't touch widow or widower's benefits. So you would just go in. Now, this and you're still subject to the retirement earnings test. So how much in 1099 income are you receiving?
I just retired, so it's only been 6 months.
Okay.
I had 5 payments so far from Social Security. So, but as I go into the next year, if you're allowed to make up to $15,720 a year.
Okay.
But if you go over that, that's when you end up paying back, right?
Yeah, you lose some of your eligibility.
Well, I figured that. How old are you now, Mark?
6'2".
Yes, almost 52.
5 or 6'2"?
Or 62, I'm sorry.
Yeah, 62.
Okay, all right.
You have to be 62 to receive.
Yeah, I was getting confused there. Okay, all right.
Right.
And so are you going to try to keep yourself at that 15,000 number or so? Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, it's kind of hard to do.
I mean,
if you go over 500 or 1,000, you end up paying half of whatever you go over back, right?
Right. You pay it back. And
well,
so
you don't
if you,
pay half of it back.
But. Well, yeah. You pay if you go over at the threshold. You don't pay all the way back. So if you make $25,720, you'd end up paying $5,000 back. The first $15,720 has no impact. Once you get over $15,720, then it's $1 for every $2 of income over that number. So if you go over it by $10,000, you pay them back $5,000. You don't pay them back all the way to $1, But
it just seems a pretty extreme 50% of something, but I guess that's the rules.
That's the rules. They used to, you know, who cares what used to happen, right? This is what's happening now. It is the rules. And so the question is, if you were to go over and instead of receiving your wife's benefit, you were going to receive only your own benefit, can you even afford to do that?
I'd end up in the same boat, because if I'm doing a 1099, I'd have to make even more then. So is it worth it? That's the whole point.
That is it. And that's an emotional question more than a financial one. In the long run, having the higher benefit at 66 will help. But if we can't afford to live until 66, that ain't a lot of help either.
No.
But I mean, so
between the $15,700 plus what I'm getting now, that's doable.
Okay, but at some point you're going to retire and not have the part-time work, and there won't be any other income.
Right.
And how will it be doable or not doable then? So it's not, unfortunately, it may.
401.
What was that?
Which brings up 401.
Okay, so you do have assets.
Yes. But the problem is, right now, if I take and use any of my 401 money, I get hit for that too. Is that 2-to-1 also?
No. That's not at all. That you don't use that at all. The 2-to-1 offset on the retirement earnings test is about earnings. It's about work. It's about current income from a job. And so if you take money out of your 401k, that does not affect giving any money back to Social Security. It'll affect taxation, but it will not make you ineligible for the benefit. So it may be that you need to sit down with somebody, develop a plan of action to make sure that everything works for you. And if you work and make more than the $15,720, you have an issue with eligibility for Social Security. Taking money out of the IRA, 401k, does not have an issue with eligibility.
Yeah, it's only the earned income.
Okay.
All right. Hey.
I was thinking that would get hit too if I pulled anything from there in order
to supplement your life.
Right.
So yeah.
We'll be there.
That explains it. Very good.
Okay, yeah, well, hold on. If you have any other questions, hold on, Mark. We're going to be there in Las Vegas very, very
soon.
So hold on if you need some more information, if you want to ask some of these questions in person or have any other questions, we'll be happy to answer them for you off the air, maybe give you a little bit more detail. But, Mark, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. So, again, we're talking about the offset, the earned income offset. If you're under full retirement age, you're going to have to start giving back some of your Social Security, $2, $1 for every $2 above.
Over the threshold.
The threshold, which currently this year, and it was last year, is $15,720 per year of earned income.
Earned,
but that's the important
thing.
We're talking
only
about W-2 type wages or 1099 net Schedule C.
Net self-employment income.
Self-employment income. That's the only thing. But if you have rental income, you've got a 401k that you're taking money out, as he said, 403B.
Pensions,
whatever it happens to be.
Those do not affect your eligibility to receive a Social Security benefit before your full retirement age. They will affect the taxation of everything, but they don't affect the eligibility. So you'll receive it. You just may have to pay taxes on it.
Now, of course,
with the other one, you're not supposed to receive it. You have to pay it back.
Right. Now, pensions could be a little different story if you're getting a pension with, one that you did not pay into Social Security.
Well, yeah, that's a whole different game there, John. Don't complicate
it. I'm being a plum. You always say cover all the angles because there's going to be somebody out there who says, well, pensions actually can affect how much you get if you're getting it from a job where you didn't pay into Social Security.
Pensions do not affect the retirement earnings test.
There you go. Right. It has nothing to do with that. It could lower it from another thing that we talked about earlier, but I'm out of time. I can't talk about that right now. Okay, I know we got some people on hold, so if you're on hold, hang on. Professor Plum will talk to everybody off the air. I promise that because I set his schedule for him. And by the way, if you need the Brain Trust off the air and you want to talk to Professor Plum or any of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group, their phone number, 800-644-1150. 800-644-1150. Talk to any of the Nationwide Brain Trust Lucia Capital Group advisors about your plan. For Professor Rick Plum, I'm Johnny Dean. This is Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.